Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 46, and entitled Uddhava Visits Vrindavan, text number 1. Si Sukumbhacha
from Lord Krishna, that on his return to
Mathura, Udalo, would describe to all the members of the Rishi dynasty the extraordinary pure love he had seen in Vrindavan. Indeed, the love, the coward man in Gopi's love for Krishna was far beyond anything the Lord's other devotees had ever experienced. And by hearing about that love, all the Lord's devotees could increase their faith and devotion. As stated in the third canto by the Lord himself, Nodahu Nabiman Yunaha. Uddhava is not even slightly different from me. Resembling Krishna so much, Uddhava is the perfect person to carry out the Lord's mission in Vrindavan. In fact, Sri Hari Ramasa stated that Uddhava is the son of Vasudev's brother, Deva Mahabharata. Uddhava, Deva Bhagavat Mahabharata, is the Dhruva. In other words, he is a cousin brother of Sri Krishna. Om Jnanindasya Indra Salakaya Shrutumitam Yatasmai Sri Guru Deva Sri Chaitanya Mahavishnu
Yes, but his success, a direct disciple of Brihaspati, he stood to us
said that Uddhava to some extent was a Jnanamistra Bhakta. There is a narration where Uddhava comes to Vrindavan, appears before the gopis, and where the gopis say to Uddhava, Uddhava, since you are a disciple of Brihaspati, and since you are very, very learned, they said, you please tell us why Krishna has left us in separation, why Krishna has gone to Mathura, why Krishna is staying in Dwarka, why Krishna is not returning, why are we suffering this separation? They said, our love is unconditional. It is not mixed with any personal motive. We have no personal interest whatsoever. We are completely dedicated to His pleasure only. Then why? Then why do we have to suffer this separation? If your learning cannot answer that question, then we don't see any merit in your learning at all. In this way, they were challenging Uddhava, who would later respond to their question. So the gopis were immediately questioning Uddhava's learning. It is stated that Uddhava's bhakti was not remixed. His devotion to Krishna was not of the same level of unconditional purity as the gopis of Vrindavan, but Uddhava's devotion was slightly mixed with jnana, with a tendency for knowledge, not to be mistaken for direct knowledge about Krishna. There is a difference between jnana and knowledge relating to Krishna. Knowledge relating to Krishna is making us each time that we come in touch with it, more and more attached to Krishna. It is stated in Srimad Bhagavatam that Krishna, he left to this planet, to his transcendental abode. Krishna, the abode, Svabhate, Dharma, Yanakani, Saha, Kalu, Nasthadri, Sandeva. It is explained that when Krishna left this earthly planet, that at that time Dharma and Jnana, or the religious principles and transcendental knowledge, also left with him. And it is stated that at that time, Srimad Bhagavatam became the one factor that was giving light brilliant as the sun in the darkness of Kali Yuga, where all knowledge or everything, where transcendental vision would be lost. So therefore we understand that then further in Srimad Bhagavatam it is stated that Krishna Katha, or discussion about Lord Krishna, is actually what can neutralize the effects of the age of Kali. That can destroy all the weaknesses that exist within this age of Kali. Therefore, discussing and remembering the glories of Krishna is certainly the most appropriate activity. The jnana, when bhakti is not considered pure, then it may be mixed with a tinge of jnana, a tinge of a desire for liberation. That is the jnana that is referred to. The jnana, the knowledge that where one is interested to become free from birth and death, to become free from material existence. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his Shastakam, is explaining, Jatani Jatani Swari Bhavana Bhakti Rami Jati Swari. He is praying that, may I be in this material world, life after life, birth after birth, engaged in your devotional service. That is perfection. So the pure devotees of the Lord, they have no personal interest. They are not interested in enjoying this material world, nor are they interested in becoming free from material existence. They are simply interested in pure devotional service, simply interested in the pleasure of Krishna. Sarvadhinimuktam tatparadrenevam Rishikesha Rishikesha Srinam Bhakti Uchite. They have no other interest to achieve, nothing to attain in this world, no designation. They're simply interested in satisfying the senses of Krishna. This is the pure platform. The devotees of Vrindavan, they envy like that kind of love of God, that kind of spirit of serving Krishna. We can ask many questions, and some questions are being raised in the Purport. One question is about Nandini Yasoda. Why did Nandini Yasoda not visit Krishna in Mathura? An answer is also given, because it would have mixed with the parental relationship Krishna had there with Vasudeva and Devaki, and that would not have worked. And an additional answer is given that also it would not have been possible to express all the feelings in the same way. Because we may have the same question about the yogis. Where Krishna wanted to leave Vrindavan, and Kruga came in, and Krishna Balaram and mounted the chariot, then all the yogis appeared there, grabbed the reins of the chariot, or grabbed other parts of the chariot, and tried to stop the chariot from leaving. Of course, to no avail, and Krishna and Balaram were taken away by Akrura. And from that moment on, all the residents of Vrindavan were heartbroken, separation. So, one question, but if the yogis were completely pure devotees of Krishna, and they had no other desire than to satisfy Krishna, then when Krishna desired to go to Mathura, then why didn't they just help him to do it? Since they were his devotees, his servants, why didn't they just dance all the way to Mathura in front of the chariot? In great tribulation, Krishna is going to Mathura, Kija. This is his desire, and we are so happy that we can serve him to fulfill his desires, because we have no other interest than to fulfill his desires. Jai! Krishna is going to Mathura. So it seems bewildering that the yogis are selfless, and yet when Krishna desires to go to Vrindavan, they try to stop him. So how are they trying to fulfill his desire in this regard? And then when he's leaving, they feel completely in separation. So it really looks like they have their own separate desires to enjoy with Krishna in Vrindavan. And when Krishna is outside Vrindavan, they don't want him. He's not the same caliber. Then he's in royalty. He is, at that time, surrounded by so many ministers, servants, and whatnot, in royal dress, and not at all acceptable like in Vrindavan. So, in this way, it seems difficult to understand how devotees are completely selfless. But the very point is that their very serve him to the same degree, with the same level of quality and intimacy as they could do with God. And therefore they decided that it was pointless going there. It was totally wrong. Why did Krishna want to go in Vrindavan, to go to Mathura in Vrindavan? That was completely against his self-interests. Krishna was better off actually staying in Vrindavan, the Gopis of the spirits. Krishna would be more happy in Vrindavan, and therefore they desired to serve Krishna in Vrindavan, to bring Krishna back to Vrindavan, to only see Krishna in Vrindavan. And after Krishna had left, they were simply thinking, when is Krishna coming back to Vrindavan? How can we get Krishna to come back to Vrindavan? And they had no other meditation. But all along, their intention only was to please Krishna. That is the amazing thing. They didn't care about their own happiness. But their own happiness was for the unhappiness of Krishna. Because they knew outside of Vrindavan, Krishna can never be fulfilled. Never. He will never be happy. This they understood. And therefore, they maintained this spirit. So, and when they were expressing these desires to Uddhava, and when they were explaining their mood of separation, they simply felt, Krishna is not accepting our love. Because our love really is pure. It is not mixed with any selfish motivation. It is simply aimed at satisfying him. Then how can he refuse? How can he refuse this love? And they were simply asking clarification from Uddhava. So Uddhava was overwhelmed. Uddhava was amazed to see such level of devotion. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the level of devotion that is manifest in the Gopis, it is said that it is of such an extraordinary nature. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has promised that whatever service will be rendered, that Krishna will reciprocate with that service. That as one surrenders unto me, I will reward accordingly. But Krishna says that here in the case of the Gopis, he doesn't know how to reward. He's saying that their service is so great that he has nothing in his possession that he can give them in reward for their service. Because there is nothing greater than their service. Nothing greater. So Krishna had nothing else that's greater than the service of the Gopis. So Krishna was perplexed. He said, I don't know how to reciprocate with this service. He said, therefore, the only thing I can think of is that the glory of your service itself will testify to the greatness of your love, and that will be your reward. I can't offer anything else. So Krishna is recognizing the love of the Gopis at the greatest. But the question remains, then why does Krishna put them through this separation? And that question is a great mystery. It is the mystery of this chapter. And that mystery is sort of gradually becoming more and more clear. I'm not qualified anyway to speak very much on this topic. So I feel my talk is of an introductory nature. I feel that this mystery of separation, why Krishna is putting his devotees to this separation on and on, is very difficult to understand. Very difficult. Or I heard that that in separation the intensity of love is increasing. But then again, it seems that in meeting the intensity after separation, the intensity is also increasing tremendously. From our own experience, if we have not seen someone for a long time, then we are very happy to see this person. So, by that, it seems that just this ongoing separation, why does Krishna not just go to Vrindavan? It's not very far. Even from Dwaras, it's relatively not far. Why doesn't he just go? Why does he send Guru? Why is he already spent time with his parents in Dwarka now? So why does he just go for a short trip? Why does he send Guru? It's bewildering. Very bewildering. So in a totally bewildered state, I'll end now with my part of the presentation and leaving you also sharing that bewilderment and heavy sort of kind of open-ended and unfinished. Where are we? What's going on? Why is Krishna not going to Vrindavan? Thank you very much. Shukla That's the end of that discussion. We've now dealt with that. We've got that. So let's move on to the next one. Because we've done that. Now we've finished it. Now all these subjects, well, even in Krishna consciousness in the broader sense, so many subjects are multifaceted, but now we're coming into the deepest part of Krishna consciousness, the situation of Vrindavan, the nature of the devotees, natures of the devotees, different categories of devotees in Vrindavan and their subcategories. And so there's that, the whole subject, but then the subset about Krishna leaving Vrindavan or coming back, and those devotees in Vrindavan, when Krishna left Vrindavan, if he left. You know, we're going into an area. Well, we're actually going into the deepest area in Krishna consciousness. And seeing Krishna consciousness is the deepest part of all knowledge, and this is the deepest part of Krishna consciousness, we should not be surprised if there are not just standard, all-encompassing answers which just get the whole thing, and then you've got it, and then you can just move on to the next question, because you got that one. It doesn't work like that. Krishna consciousness, in general, is a multi-layered subject. Just like when we read Bhagavad Gita. When I first joined in London, then I was told that Srila Prabhupada said that the first thing you must do when you join Krishna consciousness, you must read Bhagavad Gita 7 times. Then you must continue reading. And when you read Bhagavad Gita 27 times, then it is part of you. This is what they told me that Srila Prabhupada said. So, I don't actually know what Prabhupada said that, but I know they said that. And, you know, there's some type of truth in it. In the sense that if you keep on and on and on and on reading these literatures, and then not just reading but discussing and hearing the descriptions given by the devotees, naturally it just goes deeper and deeper into you, of course. That's only to be expected. But multi-layered, when we read Bhagavad Gita, which in a certain sense is the beginning part, the undergraduate study. But every time you read Bhagavad Gita, then you find there's more meaning. Different perspectives that you hadn't grasped before, you hadn't even thought of before. So, Bhagavad Vijayabhushan, at the end of his commentary on Bhagavad Gita, he says that I was living there at Radha Kund, and which of course is a very, very deep place. And he says that the devotees, though, then we were relishing everything to do with Radha Kund. But then the devotees asked me, could you write a commentary on Bhagavad Gita, please? And Bhagavad Vijayabhushan says that when they asked me that, then I thought, well, you know, we are here at Radha Kund, which is the deepest place. And now they're asking me to write a commentary on Bhagavad Gita, which is like the beginning. It's not. Anyway, he was thinking that, you know, it's very philosophical, introductory, and to help people come to Krishna consciousness. But here we are, we're in rather prudent. We are in the ultimate position, so not that there's anything wrong with Bhagavad Gita, but it's just very preliminary. So maybe it's not so appropriate under the circumstances. But then he says that, well, the devotees were asking me, so what can I do? I had to do it because the devotees asked me. So I did it. So I started doing it. But I was thinking that, well, like we said, that this is sort of the elementary part of Krishna consciousness. It's not as important, at least, shall we say, as things to do with Radha Kund and all that. But the devotees asked me, so, I'll do it. So he says that it was like Krishna put me in a boat and pushed me into the ocean of Bhagavad Gita. But then, as I went out into the ocean, the boat sank, and it became like a submarine. And I felt that I was now diving deeper and deeper into the ocean of Bhagavad Gita. And you may know, you may have heard at least, that jewels come from the ocean. This is what the Vedic scriptures say. Jewels come from the ocean. They're a product of the ocean. You know, the modern day scientists may have various other ideas, but this is what Shastra says. So Mother Devajirusha says that as I was going deeper and deeper into the ocean of Bhagavad Gita, I was discovering more and more jewels of meanings. As I was going deeper and deeper and discovering more jewels, deeper and deeper in the ocean. And then he says that it became so amazing that now these are like some part of his concluding words. He says, now I don't want to come out. So, you know, this is Bhagavad Gita, which is the beginning, the undergraduate stage. Krishna is countering the objections of many people who would otherwise not take to Krishna consciousness and try to bring them to the point via Arjuna, trying to bring them to the point where they will come to Krishna consciousness. So at the end he says, just give up all your other dharmas and just surrender to me. And that is the end of Bhagavad Gita. That the person comes to the point of saying, okay, I'll become a devotee. So this is so deep. Bhagavad Gita is so deep. It is not just the ABC. I mean, in a certain sense, even Prabhupada says it's ABC, but it's not that it is just limited to ABC, and we've all done ABC, material ABC, and we all know that once you've done it, you go on, and you don't go back to it. It's not that when you're doing on the trip that you go back, that what is the next letter after A? That's already is behind you. But Bhagavad Gita, you know, it's ABC, is not like that. That once you've done it, then you don't go, there's no point in going back to it. It's just, it becomes irrelevant. No, it remains always not just relevant, but immensely profound, and actually unlimitedly profound. So even someone like Bhagavate Vishyusha, who is great Acharya and actually a resident of the kingdom of God, even he feels that I'm going to stay in Bhagavad Gita. So now we come to the deepest part, which is, well, already it's been the description of the rasa dance and the different things which happened to do with the rasa dance directly. That is the deepest part. But now this, in another sense, is the deepest part, because now all of this is going to be conveyed to us via medium, Uddhava. Uddhava is going to be like a pair of glasses for us. Previously in the chapter 36 and around there, is the description of the Rasadas, but we sort of take it directly into it. But now, we're going to observe all these things through the eyes of an observer, Uddhava. And he's such a qualified observer that by observing through his observations, it will make our capacity to observe greater and help us for these things to become more real to us. But it's very deep. It's immensely deep. In Bhagavad Gita is so deep that even other languages feels that it's, in a sense, too deep for me, in the sense that I will never come to the limit of it ever. So what to speak of this? So, you know, therefore, there are not exactly hard and fast answers to a lot of these questions and the perspectives raised. Like, we'll see. Well, one thing that struck me as far as she was reading the purport, the question was raised, why did Krishna not invite Nandini Yashoda to visit him in Mathura? Well, they did come when he went, but then he sent them back. And one understanding is that it would have clashed, it would have been a type of clash, or in technical terms, it would have been rasa basa. Nandini Yashoda there, and Vasudeva Devaki there, and Krishna feeling that I have to give my time and attention to Vasudeva and Devaki, and therefore I cannot spend so much time with Nandini Yashoda. And, you know, they all, the four of them, Nandini Yashoda, Vasudeva Devaki, they're going to be expressing related but somewhat different moods. The Mathura mood, the Vrindavan mood, who knows what's going to happen. So I was thinking about that, and I remembered part of the description of Rika Bhakti, which is it's very amazing, very beautiful, it's extremely profound. And it's so laden with transcendental emotion that when I first read it many years ago, almost 20 years ago, that it really struck me that when Akura was about to take Krishna Balaram to Mathura, then the inhabitants of Vrindavan, particularly the gopis, but all the inhabitants, they initially were making, not that they just tried to stop the chariot, but they were trying to stop it at every step. And trying to stop the chariot was just the last step. And through, as this whole thing was developing, and Akura step by step was getting closer to the point of getting on the chariot and then leaving. So there was like a debate, an argument going on. The attendants from Dharma were giving different reasons why Akrura should not take Krishna and Balaram. But Akrura was giving his reasons why he should take them. And one thing he says is there, read about the Tathagata, he appeals to their sense of humanity and compassion, the inhabitants of Vrindavan. And he says, look, Kamsa is about to kill Krishna's parents, Vasudeva and Devaki. He says that Kamsa has his sword raised already to cut their heads off. He has his sword raised already to kill the parents of Krishna and Balaram. Don't you think that it is only right that we should stop him? And this is the only way to stop him, if Krishna comes. There's no other way. If Krishna does not come, then nothing else can stop Kamsa from bringing his sword down and killing them. So he presents this argument on the grounds of compassion that, don't you think it is right? It is only right that Krishna and Balaram's parents be saved. So, well, it sounds good. It sounds like the right argument. And doubtless Akrura was completely convinced that he was correct. But then the gopis reply. They give a very amazing, extremely powerful, and deeply felt emotion-laden reply. They say to Akrura, who are these people that you are saying are the parents of the son of Nanda and Yashoda? So, you see, it's coming like from a whole different conception of reality. Who are these people who you say are the parents of the son of Nanda and Yashoda? So the two positions, in that sense, are irreconcilable. In that sense, you cannot reconcile those two positions. Akrura is totally convinced Krishna is the son of Vasudeva and Devaki. That's all there is to it. Because it's almost like he saw Krishna come out from the womb of Devaki. I mean, after all, he did. So they are his parents. But they're in Vrindavan, there's this other perspective. So, you know, just to get a black and white answer, that it's like this, and it's not like that, we can now answer the question. That subject is done. We can move on to the next subject. We are solving problems here today. You can't do it. You can't really do it. And, you know, then the question Maharaj raised the question at the end. Why did the gopis not just go to Mathura? If they knew that that is what Krishna wanted, and their only business was to please Krishna, and this is what would please Krishna, why didn't they just go? After all, it is literally just down the road. You can walk there in a couple of hours. Just by foot, you can that's really. It's not like going from here to the United States or something like that. It's a, you know, it's a bit of more of a mission. This, you can walk there. If you start out for breakfast, you'll be there before lunch time. It's not a big deal. So why didn't they do it? Well, I mean, you know, understanding, as Myra said, there 101% absorption in the mood of simply pleasing Krishna, that's all, as their absolute life and soul. Why didn't they just do it? Well, you know, again, there's not just a simple black and white answer that they didn't do it because of this, and that's why they didn't do it. And that's how we answer that one too. And now we can go on to the next part. We are really solving problems today. It's not so simple. And you know, we can refer, we can just give a little sort of what preview of what's coming up in the following verses. Last year or the year before, I had to give class in Mayapur during the GBC meetings on one of the verses in this chapter, a little further on, where this type of subject matter is sort of, at least you get some insights, that when Uddhava entered Vrindavan, as described just some several verses on, or 20 or so verses on, in this very chapter, that Uddhava, as he entered Vrindavan, he, first of all, he saw the most beautiful, happy scene. Everyone was in ecstasy. The gopis were chanting the Gata and just singing songs about Krishna. They were so happy. And the men were getting ready to take the cows out. And they were so happy. And the cows and the bulls were so happy. The scene was just one of unlimited bliss and happiness. And it was clear that, why was it like that? Because Krishna was there. Krishna was there. But then he moved on a few steps, like the next verse or one or two verses later. And now as he's going, he's just moving a few steps deeper into Vrindavan. What does he see? Total devastation. Everyone is practically dead. So what's going on? Is it like that they're all sort of schizophrenic? You know, like everyone is in some, has got some dual type of consciousness at the same time, and they switch from one to the other simultaneously, and not just the humans, but the animals, and not just the animals, but the trees, and the grass, and the flowers. When Buddha first entered, it was just like spring, the height of spring. All the trees were blossoming. It was so beautiful. Then just a few steps later, it's like the worst winter you ever saw. All the trees are dead. They're all dead. And every living entity is like they're dead. So what happened? What's going on? Vishvanatha Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary on these very verses, he says, I forget the exact thing he says, but it's to the effect, that I will give a revolutionary type of analysis. He says something like this. And he says that, well, I don't know, I should take you this far into the preview. Maybe you should just all come back, or keep coming back every day to hear the story unfold. But in essence, and he gives, you know, an elaborate purport for pages in his commentary on these few verses. He says, I think there is a parallel reality in Vrindavan. That there is a Vrindavan, and Krishna is there, even though he apparently left. But then there is another side of Vrindavan where he lived. So anyway, we don't want to go into it too much, but you know, I think you get the idea. We're talking about a subject which is vast. And then just to sort of complicate, well, it is actually to complicate the subject further, or just not really complicated in the sense, certainly not complicated in the sense of just throw something in to confuse people unnecessarily and obscure reality. But in Chaitanya Charitamrita, today of course, at the Nittai Gaura Sundar Temple in Phoenix, which is today being transformed into the new Jagannath Puri Temple in Phoenix. So, in the description in Majjhavila of the Ratha Yatra, Lord Chaitanya's dancing in the Ratha Yatra, we read how Lord Chaitanya was going into certain type of consciousness during the course of the Ratha Yatra. As Swarup Dhanada Goswami was singing different verses, which are verses sung by Srimati Radharani when she meets Krishna in Kurukshetra. And as Maharaj was saying, Radharani was expressing that we are meeting you here in Kurukshetra. And it's very nice, of course. How could it be anything other than extremely nice? But it is not the same as when we were with you in Vrindavan. Therefore, we want you to come back to Vrindavan. So she is appealing to Krishna, and between Swarup Dhanada Goswami and Lord Chaitanya, who is in the mood of Radharani, this discussion between Radharani and Krishna is being described, is being related, and Krishna says to Srimati Radharani in response, Radharani said, you must come back. There is no other way. Nascheva, nascheva, nascheva. There is no other way. No other way. No other way. But Krishna replies, very intriguing reply, which opens up just a whole other vista of questions and understandings and perspectives. Krishna says that, you know, I feel so unfortunate that I left Vrindavan. And And you know, I got to the point where I felt so strongly that I must go back. I felt so strongly that I started worshipping Lord Narayan and praying to Lord Narayan, please help me to go back. You know, this again opens up another interesting aspect to the whole situation, which is that all the inhabitants of Vrindavan, including Krishna, they are all great devotees of Lord Narayana. Yeah. They're great devotees of Lord Narayana. And in all their temple rooms, because each house has this little temple room in Vrindavan, who is on the altar? Lakshmi Narayana. So when Krishna said this to Radharani, I worship Lord Narayan very seriously, then Radharani thought, wow, that's interesting. This is going to be, because Lord Narayan is so merciful, he's going to say something very interesting now. And Krishna said, I worship Lord Narayan, and I got his mercy, and by his mercy, I come to Vrindavan every day. And in the evening I go back to Dwarka. So like I said, here we have now a whole other perspective on the situation. Yes. But actually Krishna was there every day. So one answer to the question, why did the gopis not leave Vrindavan and just move? I mean, why didn't they, everyone just vacate Vrindavan and just move to Mathura and then later move to Dwarka? Well, one answer is because Krishna was there in Vrindavan every day. And, you know, it's a very interesting thing. There is a state, it is called Prema Vaichitya. In Prema Vaichitya, one of the prominent characteristics, of course, it is also extremely multifaceted, but one of the interesting characteristics of it is that people in Prema Vaichitya, it means the madness of prema. When Krishna is present before them, they think he is not. And when Krishna is not present before them, they think that he is. And not just like think, oh, maybe I'm thinking that it might be like this, but they think they are convinced. Like, you probably know the story of Prem Saroma in Vrindavan, that Radharani was sitting on Krishna's lap. There was no Prem Saroma at that time, but they were there at the imminent place, which became Prem Saroma. And Radharani was sitting on Krishna's lap, but one big Brahma, bee, bumblebee, honeybee. It came and it started buzzing around Srimati Radharani. Buzzing and buzzing and buzzing. And it was a little bit of a distraction. Of course, that bumblebee was just trying to get some of the nectar from Krishna, who is Madhu, who is the sweetest of the sweet. But it was disturbing Radharani a little. So Krishna appealed to Madhu Mangal, please chase away this bee. And Madhu Mangal would break clear and bravado and really getting into it. He chased the bee away in a very dramatic fashion. And he came back, and B, there to be in Sanskrit, but one of them is madhu, which means honey or sweet. So when after he had done his service and he wanted to be patted on the back by Krishna and Radharani doing it so nicely and effectively, he came back and he announced, madhu is God. Maybe the bee is gone. But Krishna is sweeter even than honey. So one name of Krishna is madhu. So when he announced madhu is God, Radharani, in her madness of love, she thought Krishna has gone. And she said, what? You mean Krishna has gone? Krishna has gone? And she's sitting on Krishna's lap. And Krishna, observing that she's becoming a little confused, Krishna said, no, 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 I haven't gone. I'm here, see? I'm right here. So that's question answered. It's all problem solved. But not in prema vaichitya. Radharani looked at Krishna and said, no, you're not here. You've gone. And Krishna said, no, I haven't gone. Look, you can see me. You can feel me. You're sitting on my lap. I am not gone. I am here. And Radharani said, no, you have gone. You are just a hallucination. She said, this has happened to me so many times. I look at the tamal tree, but I see you, and I can all carry it away, and I think it's you. But then they point out that, look, it's just a tamal tree. And then I see, oh yes, they're right. So same thing here. You are not here. You are definitely not here. You have gone. And you are just a hallucination. And how do I know that? Can you think of a reason how she knew it to be true? Can you think of the reason? Because Madhu Mangal said so. And he is a Brahmin. And Brahmins never lie. So Madhu Mangal said, you have gone, then you have gone. So this is prema vaichitya. This is madness in love. So then back and forth, Krishna was saying, no, I haven't gone. And you know this Madhu Mangal. He doesn't always tell the truth. He is not exactly what you expect a Brahmin to be. He's associated with me. And everyone knows I lie all the time. So he must be lying when he says I've gone. And Radharani said, you're lying. So you see, these things become immensely complex. Actually, they become unlimitedly complex. And you can go into it deeper and deeper and deeper eternally. And you never come to the end where you can just say, yes, that's it. Now we've got it. Because you'll find there's another turn. So anyway, Radharani started crying because Krishna had gone. Krishna started crying because Radharani just wouldn't accept that he was still there. And so many tears, not a few little crocodile tears as they say, but so many tears, this is like serious crying. This is like really serious crying that formed a lake, and the lake is still there, praying Sarona, the lake which consists of the tears of love of Radha and Krishna. So Krishna, he came back every day. Very amazing. So he left, but he didn't leave. Then he left, but he was coming back every day. So what is the answer? The answer is Hare Krishna. There is no just answer. That's all. There is no just answer. But then, all these things are multifaceted. In Brihad Bhagavatamrita, because Brihad Bhagavatamrita, not that it is exactly trying to just give, the absolute end answers to these types of questions which arise in Srimad Bhagavatam. Although Brihad Bhagavatamrita is a commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam and is clarifying many questions which arise in Srimad Bhagavatam. But in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Krishna says, when there's this whole discussion going on, there are two parties in Dwaraka. One party is saying, you must go back to Vrindavan. If you don't, they will all die. The other party is saying, no, you must not go back to Vrindavan. Because they give all sorts of different reasons. Hopefully you've read Brihad Bhagavatamrita by now. The different reasons, like Kamsa's mother. Kamsa's mother says that, I know why they want you to go back to Vrindavan. It is because you used to herd the cows every day and you didn't ask for money. Now you're dead, they cannot find any free labor to look after the cows. There are people who are living, but they all want money. And those people, Nanda Maharaj and company, they are so miserly, they will not pay them any money. They are just hoping that you'll come back, so you will herd the cows again without taking money. This is why they want you to come back. This is Kamsa's mother. What's her name? Padmavati. Yes. Kamsa's mother. And then there are others who don't want Krishna to go back to Vrindavan because they are afraid he will not come back to Dwaraka. And then they will be left in the situation which the inhabitants of Vrindavan are in. But then Krishna gives his analysis. His conclusion is, I will not go back. Because according to Srimad Bhagavatam, he does not. Or at least, there is no explicit description of him going back as such. Very clearly, it's all, kind of indirect. That subject is dealt with indirectly. But Krishna gives his analysis, all right, I will not go back. Why? Because if I go back, I'm such a busy person. I have so many devotees. I cannot just stay in one place permanently. I have to move around. So if I go back, then they're going to become happy again, of course. In fact, they're going to become more happy than they were even before. They're going to become even more happy. But then I'm going to have to leave again. And when I leave again, they are going to become even more sad than they are now. Now it is so bad that apparently Balaram Raja or Balaram have been go down and they become even more happy that their ideas again, then they will become even more unhappy than they are now. And if now they may die, but if I go back and then lead again, then surely they will die. So better I don't go back, because at least now they're not dying. So you get the logic, interesting logic. Don't want to increase the ecstasy, because if I increase the ecstasy, then the pain of separation will be even worse. So this is Krishna's logic. So according to Rita Bhagavatamrita, he didn't go back. But according to him, he did go back in Chaitanya Charitamrita. According to Jiva Goswami, Jiva Goswami has written a book. Well, at least the first part of it is simply discussing, did Krishna go back or not? Simply discussing. The whole book is very interesting. There's some introductory verses. And after those introductory verses, maybe 10 or 15 or something, then the rest of that part of the book is one sentence. It's like, I forget how many verses, but maybe 300 verses. It's just one sentence. He is analyzing how it must be that Krishna must have gone back. And his concluding sentence is that, well, he says many things, but his final statement is that he must have gone back because I said he did in Gopal Champu, and he would not let my words go in vain. Yeah, and many other reasons, many other reasons he gives why Krishna must have gone back. Yeah, we won't go into all the details, but you should read it sometime. It's quite eye-opening. So Krishna says, I will not go back. Then he says, I go back and leave and go back and leave. Then he says, I never leave Vrindavanam Varichacha Ekapadam Nagachati. Krishna never takes one step out of Vrindavan. Yes, so we are getting into a very interesting area of Srimad Bhagavatam and a very, very interesting area of the discussion of Krishna consciousness. And just another thing, just to throw into the mix, is that, like in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Radharani speaking to Krishna in Kurukshetra says that, it's very nice meeting you here, but you should come to Vrindavan. That's what we really want. It's not the same here, even though it's nice, but it's not the same. Therefore, you must come back. And like Maharaj raised the question, why didn't they just leave Vrindavan? Well, and the answer to that is, they cannot leave Vrindavan. Why can they not leave Vrindavan? Because Vrindavan is not different from Krishna. They belong in Vrindavan. They have no existence outside Vrindavan. So therefore they cannot leave Vrindavan. They momentarily left when Krishna went to Mathura. They briefly left to go to Kurukshetra during the eclipse, but they couldn't actually leave Vrindavan. It's not possible for them to actually leave Vrindavan, even for Krishna, because Vrindavan is Krishna. and they cannot be Christian. So, hope we didn't confuse anyone. There are numerous other perspectives. We won't go into them now, but it is very nice. This very beautiful discussion opens up all sorts of interesting vistas in Christian consciousness, all of which you can sort of move down, by understanding different things. But then you find there are other things, and it doesn't really confuse the situation, it just makes it richer. Like Buddha, Buddha is so great as a devotee. Amongst the inhabitants of Vrindavan, the gopi, Radharani is the best. Then the gopis are the best. After the gopis, the next is Mother Yashoda. She is the highest in Matsalya Raj. After her is Nanda Maharaj. He's second in Matsalya Raj. But when you get out of Vrindavan, you move out of Vrindavan, and you come to Mathura, Dwaraka, then who is first? Is it Lakshmi? No, it's Uddhava. Uddhava is the first. Outside Vrindavan, he's the topmost. Outside Vrindavan. So yes, Jnana Bhakta, that's there in a certain sense. But it's not exactly in an absolute sense. In a very high transcendental sense, it may be like that. And the gopis accuse him, as we'll see shortly. They accuse him. He's explaining very nice things that Krishna has not left. He is still with you. Very nice things. And they say, stop speaking your jnana to us. We are not philosophers. Don't try to bewilder us with facts and figures. Don't do it like Akrura did with his arguments. Just bring Krishna back, that's all. The Buddha, he's very great devotee. And here in the third book, Krishna himself says, is quoted, Uddhava is not even slightly different from me. But the inhabitants of Vrindavan means in the sense that I love Uddhava as much as I love me. And let us all face it. Who do we love the most? Me. I mean ourselves. If you analyze, you will be forced to admit that this is true. But with Uddhava, Krishna's relationship with Uddhava is so deep that Krishna says, you are not even slightly different from me. Which means, I love you as much as I love me. Which is sort of inconceivable, really. But then the next point is that the inhabitants of Vrindavan, Krishna loves even more than he loves himself. So they are the topmost. And therefore, how could he not return to Vrindavan if they wanted it? It's not possible. And that's the position I value. But it's all very easy. Hare Krishna. And you know what? Srila Bhagavatam says the same thing. I have got the reference here, but it's first canto. Is it Kuti or the inhabitants of Dwaraka says that when Krishna Krishna leaves Dwaraka sometimes to go to Mathura and Vrindavan that we feel separation from. So Srimad Bhagavatam cannot be wrong. This is one of the arguments Jiva Goswami says, that if Krishna did not return to Vrindavan, then Srimad Bhagavatam would be lying. And that is not possible. Hare Krishna. Shiva Prabhupada.